Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
March Madness, what have we learned so far? What have we learned about March Madness? Or what have we learned about college basketball during March Madness? Coaching carousel is firing on all cylinders. Kyle Smith introduced as the new Stanford coach today. We've got, you know, coaches like Andy Enfield headed off to SMU. Certainly, if you are a Washington fan, you're knowing, you know, Danny Sprinkle gets the job at Washington. I kind of wanted to make sense of this. And I wanted to bring on somebody who could help us do it. Ryan Svensson, longtime basketball coach and the CEO of Pure Focus Sports Group, represents some coaches, also manages some basketball and football and golf events. Ryan Svensson joining us now. Ryan, thank you for making time.
Hey, you bet, John. Appreciate you having me on.
Give us an idea as I start to talk about, like, sort of just the ecosystem and the coaching carousel and Is it more active than ever before, or are we just hearing more about it than we did in prior years?
No, I think you're right. I think it's more active, and I think you're seeing the timeline from when a job opens to the next guy being hired is shorter than it's ever been. I mean, in some cases, it's hours. You know, I mean, if you see a coaching search go more than 3-4 days, that's a long one now. And I think the portal and NIL is really driving the speed of these hires. And so, you know, if you're an athletic director and you don't have a short list ready to go, you're really putting yourself in a bad position. So I think you're absolutely right on. These are quicker, and there's more conversation about them than any year I can remember in recent memory.
How does that affect the hires? Because, you know, everybody's worried about the portal. You see Washington, they don't even have an AD, and they go, hey, we're going to hire Danny Sprinkle anyway because that's the direction we were going. You have, you know, Andy Enfield being introduced at, you know, his new job at SMU, or getting ready to be introduced, Pat Kelsey going to Louisville. It seems like, you know, there maybe isn't time for the normal hiring process. How does that, in your mind, impact college basketball?
Well, I think the schools that knew they were going to make a move have a little bit of an advantage in that regard, right? So Stanford, by Christmas, they probably know they're going to make a move. They're, you know, barring some, you know, miraculous run in the second half of the season, you know, they're going to move on and make a change. And so they're probably, you know, in a more advantaged situation in that they're able to put together a list. They're able to do a little more due diligence, dig in on, you know, who the two or three, you know, guys they really want to try to go after. It's these places that, you know, where jobs open completely unexpectedly, you know, out of nowhere, that then are in a little bit of a scramble situation. And so, you know, I think places like Stanford and you know, places where they knew they were going to make a move, that they've done their due diligence. There's not going to be any surprises. It's now that USC is going to have to make a move here quickly to try to, you know, save guys from jumping in the portal. You know, are they going to make a mistake in that process? And I think the you run the risk of making a hiring error, which, you know, anymore you make a mistake in the hiring, and it's a $10, $15, $20 million mistake. It's not just losing a few games here or there. It's, boy, we made a mistake, and now 2 years later, we're paying, you know, $20 million to buy somebody out and $20 million to hire the next guy. And so it's an expensive mistake, and I think you're seeing athletic directors and university presidents probably far more rushed than they feel comfortable doing. As far as the product on the floor, I mean, yeah. I think there's always going to be bad hires, but, you know, I think they're doing it because they've got to try to get ahead of the portal is really the play.
You had followed the hiring cycle 3 years ago when Shante Ligons goes from, you know, Eastern Washington to the University of Portland. It's a good hire. They hire the right guy. Danny Sprinkle was an option there for UP. He doesn't get the job. Now he's introduced at Washington. You know, it kind of feels like timing matters more than anything right now.
Oh, it absolutely does. You know, you go back 5 years, and Danny was the second assistant at Cal State Fullerton, which is kind of a middle of the Big West conference. He gets the job at Montana State. A lot of that based on, he had a great playing career there. He's really well thought of by the university there. And so then after a year, he tries to get the University of Portland job. And, obviously Shante had a much more impressive resume at that point. It had back-to-back, one year they won the conference regular season. The next year they win the conference tournament. They take Oklahoma, down to the last couple minutes in the first round. And, to me, Shante was a no-brainer hire. In fact, I told a friend on the UP Board of Regents in the fall before, I said, hey, if you really want to sound like you know what you're talking about, tell the AD that we need to hire Shante Leggins whenever, Terry Porter's run is done. And so, they hire Shante, and Danny goes back to Montana State and has two great years, gets the Utah State job, and then has a great year there. And now, he's making, what was his contract? Well, over $20 million. I mean, it's crazy how things work in life, but especially in coaching. It really is truly about being at the right place at the right time. And I think Shante's a great coach, but UP's a tough job. And Shante's, banging his head against the wall, I'm sure, at times with NIL and some of the limitations that Portland has there. And, and now here's Danny probably counting his blessings and his dollars that it didn't work out for him on the bluff.
I was at the WCC tournament in Vegas. I spent a day there, and it was really eye-opening to me to see the differences in investment in NIL from the top schools. And you can almost line the standings up with how much they're spending in NIL. And so how does a program like UP take steps forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, the WCC really, every conference to an extent is, but it's a real, as Washington State and Oregon State move into the conference, it's really a top six, sort of the haves, and then the next six, or the have-nots. And unfortunately right now, Portland's in that second tier. And how do you get out of that? I think the thing that you've got to do from an administrative level is you've got to convince the fan base and the donor base and the alumni base that this NIL thing is real. I think sometimes it's small schools that, especially don't have football. Sometimes it's not an easy concept to wrap their heads around. And it's brand new. I mean, it's new for all of us. It's changing quickly. So I think you've got to paint that picture of, you got to look at a guy like Moses Wood. Moses Wood was, last year, second or third best player at Portland. He goes and gets close to $100,000 from Washington. That stuff's going to happen repeatedly if the University of Portland doesn't find a way to make a commitment and find the funding to try to counteract some of that. And so I think you got to start there. I think you got to start by, really painting that picture of, hey, Gonzaga has an NIL, collective north of $1 million. San Francisco's, approaching that number. St. Mary's is approaching that number. I mean, these, we're asking Shante to compete, and it's not even close to a fair or level playing field. So you either got to figure out a way to get it done, or you're going to lose coaches. And you just kind of accept that we're always going to be in the bottom of the conference, and that's just our lot in life. Hopefully for Shante's sake, because I think real highly of him as a coach and as a person, they're able to make some things happen at UP and give him a fighting chance.
We're talking to Ryan Svensson, who is a basketball coach, and he owns and operates Pure Focus Sports Group. Let's talk about the opening rounds of the men's tournament. Let's start there. Kentucky gets knocked out. Everybody's celebrating what was a huge upset, but then asking questions about the one and dones. Can we draw sweeping conclusions about what programs might do with younger players who are certainly going to be NBA talents, but aren't going to help coaches win games in the tournament?
Yeah, I think I'm curious to see how that sort of develops and transpires over the next three or four seasons. Cause you got to remember too, right now we're still in that COVID where kids are getting their COVID year. So, there's more older players around in programs now, and that's going to start changing back, right? So, we're not going to have kids that are playing 5 years of college basketball. So I think we'll sort of see a shift where teams are going to get a little bit younger again, but it's going to take a couple more years to really filter, through that whole COVID kind of ruling and getting that extra year. But with that being said, I do think you're right. I think the best teams are going to be the ones that are going to find a balance of older guys that are experienced, usually a little more physically mature, that can handle the grueling, 5-6 month season that is college basketball. But at the end of the day, too, college coaches aren't going to turn down guys that can play. I mean, if you're really, really talented, you're going to be able to find a home at a lot of places, right? I mean, Duke next year, their best player is going to be Cooper Flagg. He's going to come in. He's uber talented. They're not going to tell a guy like him, hey, no thanks. We're going to go try to find somebody in the portal that, you know, 22 and has lifted weights for 4 years. Like, guys that can play, guys that are talented are always going to be able to find a home. I think the guys, the colleges that are going to do it best are going to be the ones that find that balance of, okay, we've got two or three guys that are, you know, younger but really talented, and then we've got three or four guys that are older, more mature, more experienced, maybe not as naturally gifted, but are a little more prepared to play college basketball. And you look at Oregon. Oregon's a great example of that. You know, you think if Oregon had been healthy all year, boy, what a great mix. They would, you know, Jackson, Mookie, Kwame, they've got three really talented young guys, and then you've got veterans like Dante and you know, Kusar, who are, you know, experienced, physically developed, and I think that's what you're going to see, is the teams that are really successful have the right balance and mix.
I've heard coaches now talk about, you know, I always heard coaches in football and men's basketball say we need to get longer or we need to get stronger, and now they're saying we need to get older, you know, and I think that's an interesting twist. Since you're on the subject of Oregon, Tony Stubblefield, longtime assistant, I know you know Stubby well. He's been around the program since he was fired at DePaul midseason. He's been around Oregon's program. He showed up at the NCAA tournament games. He was in Vegas for the Pac-12 games. You know how coaching staffs work together. What role could he potentially play? Do you expect he's going to be back around Oregon, or do you, you know, I don't think it's coincidental that he showed up at their games.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's kind of the worst kept secret in college basketball, that Stubbs is going to be back in Eugene in some capacity. What their staff makeup will look like next year, you know, I think that's probably still to be determined, but I don't think he would have been so prominent and put himself out there, you know, be so visible if the thought wasn't that there's going to be a home for him in some capacity. You know, the NCAA did a really you know, here in the last year or two, by expanding the number of coaches that can be on the floor. So they can still only have three assistants out recruiting at any one time, but you now can have like five or six guys on the floor coaching. And so, you know, previously it was those three guys that could be, you know, out recruiting were also the only guys that could be on the floor coaching. So it's really opened up room on coaching staff for, you know, kind of veteran guys that are maybe more X and O savvy and don't necessarily want to be out recruiting all the time. You know, can still coach on the floor, have a role, have an impact there, but not have to be traveling all over. And so I think that's going to benefit, you know, somebody like Oregon in this situation where they can probably find a spot for a guy like Stubbs that maybe wouldn't have been so easy, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, Stubbs is an off-the-charts phenomenal recruiter. I mean, he's an elite recruiter, you know, maybe a top-10 guy in the country. So, you know, and that was before NIL was even in the portal were really a thing. So, I mean, I think the potential for his, you know, just his natural personality, his ability to connect with young kids. Now you've got the, you know, the NIL collective that Oregon's got and the transfer portal. I mean, I think the sky's the limit for the kind of kids that he can help bring into Oregon.
I'm sitting on press row in Vegas for some of the Pac-12 games, and here he comes walking down the aisle, big smile on his face, fist bumps me as he goes by, and he says, Oregon by three, as they're playing Arizona. You know, he's just got that personality, and I think, you know,
charisma.
And no offense to Dana Altman, but I feel like Stubblefield leaving, something changed at Oregon too, because they had to have somebody else take over that role.
Yeah, you know, they did, and that's probably, if you look back in the last, say, 3 or 4 years, you know, I mean, certainly COVID has played a role, you know, just being in Oregon where things were a little more restrictive than they maybe were in other parts of the country. But then, you know, the coaching staff's had a lot of turnover. I mean, for a long time it had been really stable and you know, a ton of stability. And then Stubbs leaves and you know, Fish had left. And then they had guys that came that you know, were accomplished and were, you know, really good coaches. But then they bounced after a year and you know, the other places. And so I think that instability in the coaching staff has certainly, you know, you can't discount that as with some of Oregon's struggles in the last few years. So, you know, hopefully, you know, if Stubbs does indeed come back, that'll provide some of that stability. And, you know, Mike Meninga's a phenomenal recruiter, phenomenal coach, you know, very, very similar to Stubbs in that regard. To get two or three guys like that going, and, you know, all of a sudden Oregon becomes that top-10 level program again.
Ryan Svensson with us, Pure Focus Sports is his company. Ryan, Kyle Smith to Stanford, does it work?
I think it does, and I think the challenge, you know, Stanford is a really interesting spot, you know, with the NIL, and I'm, you know, being a private school, they don't have to report as, you know, like state university, public universities do. And so I'm not super familiar with what their NIL collective looks like or what its capabilities are. Stanford's, you know, very unique in that they're recruiting a specific kind of kid, you know, the academic profile, that whole deal. Kyle Smith is one of the smartest guys you're ever going to meet. I mean, he, you know, you've talked to him. I mean, he very easily could be a professor at, you know, Washington State or Stanford, and you wouldn't think twice about it. I mean, he's an off-the-charts intelligent guy, and he's also had a lot of success at high-profile, high-academic schools. And so if anybody's a good fit, I mean, there's maybe three or four guys in the country that are like, where you go, boy, that guy can make Stanford work. And I think Kyle Smith is at the top of that list. So I expect him to be able to keep some of these guys that have jumped in the portal. I think we'll see a few of those guys sort of reverse trend and come back to the fold and stay in Palo Alto. And, you know, I don't know that Stanford's a place you're ever going to get back to. Mike Montgomery really had it going, and they were, you know, making Final Fours and a top 10 team in the country. But I think he can win there, and I think Kyle Smith's the guy that can do that.
Give me an idea of how complex that portal is, because, you know, I talked to a Pac-12 coach the other day. His season ended. He's, you know, right in the portal, monitoring who's in there, who's available, who he can talk to. I talked to a donor yesterday who said that they thought Jordan Pope at Oregon State might command $250,000 to $500,000 a year in NIL money. Give us an idea, because most of us don't, you know, live, work, or dabble in that ecosystem. What is that like?
So I think the first, and really this is, we're seeing this with coaches too, is that NIL is driving all this stuff. So I think you hear so much negative stuff about the portal. You know, if the NIL opportunities didn't exist, the portal wouldn't be nearly the thing that it is, right? So, you know, kids are putting themselves in the portal. Part of it to explore opportunities that might be out there at other places. Part of it to make it known that, hey, I'm, you know, kind of on the look. Come make me an offer. But I think as you look at schools that are going to be the most successful, are going to be the ones that are able to do two things. They're able to have NIL money available to retain their own players, and then they're going to have NIL money available to go out and get up, you know, get kids out of the portal. And, you know, I talked to a guy from a Big 12 that runs a Big 12 collective today, and he goes, that's what we're, you know, we kind of diversify our spending in those two areas, in those two buckets. Like, we want to keep our guys here, but we also want to make sure we have money available to go out and, you know, get guys that are available. And you got to be able to do both. And if you can't, then you got to prioritize one or the other, and then it becomes tough to win. But I agree with you. A guy like Pope, you know, yeah, I mean, 250, 500, 500,000 on the open market. And, you know, you think about the NCAA tournament, think about the final 16 teams. How many of those teams have a guy that's their best player that came in this year through the portal, through NIL? I was thinking Tennessee, right, and Arizona. I mean, everybody else, the portal kids are guys that are filling a gap, filling a role. And, you know, I think if Pope were to, somebody like Pope, I hope he doesn't. I mean, I think Oregon State's the best fit for him from a basketball standpoint. But, you know, let's say a guy like Jordan Pope were to leave, is he going to go somewhere in the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12 and be the best player on a Sweet 16 team? I don't think so. I think he's going to go and be more of a complimentary piece, fill a void, you know, an important void that somebody needs a shooter, somebody needs a ball handler, and he can come in and be that guy. I don't think he's a guy that's going to lead somebody to a Final Four and be the best player. But that's what the portal is doing more and more of. You don't see best players leave and get big money elsewhere. It's more the second and third and fourth and fifth guys that are going and getting, you know, more money than they were at their previous school. So that's the part that I think is the challenge of how do we keep those guys, you know, in our program and then have some money available to go get, you know, guys that we need to fill our gaps.
I want you to play athletic director. You're at Washington State now. Let's say they've hired you today. You got to hire a men's basketball coach to replace Kyle Smith. Where do you start your search?
So I don't even have a search. And I, my thing about places like Washington State and Oregon State, they got to go outside the box a little bit. And I think sometimes there's so much about winning that initial press conference and having that sort of flashy hire. And, you know, mm-hmm. Craig Robinson is an example. I think places like Oregon State and Washington State, they got to have a grinder. And I mean, Washington State has the best, the biggest grinder on their staff already. I think if they promoted Jim Shaw today, that would address a ton of their potential portal concerns of kids And Jim is an off-the-charts worker and a grinder. And he's had, you know, tremendous success at a variety of different Pac-12 schools. He was at Oklahoma at one point, has had coaching experience, and he took over Western Oregon, which was, let's say, an average Division II program at that point, takes him to a Division II Final Four, which hasn't happened, you know, ever in school history. So he's got, you know, Division I head coaching experience at kind of a tough job. He's had success. I mean, I know this. If Jim Shaw's on the open market, he's going to have his pick of you know, top-level assistant jobs, you know, almost immediately. So that's where I would go. And I don't even know who else would be on that short list if it's me, because I think he's a perfect fit for what they need. They don't need a guy to win the press conference on opening day. They need somebody that's going to dig in and get to work and has had success at kind of a tough spot before. And, you know, Jim has that background.
Jim Shaw to Washington State. You heard it here first. Is Ryan Svensson is the new AD there? Hey, listen,
I would love to see. And guess who else? Guess who else got passed over for the University of Portland job?
Yeah, I heard that Kyle Smith is also pushing Shaw for the job, and so it's the most Kyle Smith thing ever, because Shaw could help him if he took him with him to Stanford, but you know he wants.
I agree, and I'm sure he would love to have. I don't know how good Jim would be at a place like Stanford. I think Jim's better suited to be at a Washington or a Washington State, or I think, you know, just his personality and the kind of kids he connects with, and you know, like how he recruits and how they want to play. I don't know that he's necessarily. I think his skill set and his ability level is better suited at a place like Washington or Washington State. Let's say this, if they pass on him, and I don't have any inside knowledge of this, if Washington State doesn't hire him, I would be shocked if Danny Sprinkle doesn't go after him pretty aggressively.
There you heard it. Ryan, I appreciate you, man. We'll get you back on. I'd love to get more of your insight as this stuff unfolds. You're a wealth of knowledge. Thank you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime, John. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Ryan Svensson. Get laying down the intel there, Stephen. You like that?
There you go. I love the intel. You know, he's right on, Jim Shaw. I think he'd be a good fit there. And if they can get him, you get him, right? I think, you know, Ryan Svensson knows a lot of people and knows a lot of things. So you put a lot of trust in a guy like him and what he has to say about these type of things.
Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the bald-faced
truth. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth radio show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth radio show. Thanks for listening.